Well, I hope you had a great St. Patty's Day. Can't believe next week, first day of spring already. Going way too fast. We'll be back in a moment. Fascinating discussion with Michio Kaku, Physics of the Future, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Dr. Michio Kaku. Michio, on your book, Physics of the Future, love the artwork on the cover. Do you think cities really will look that way in 2100?
Well, it's hard to say what architects will do because, of course, that's a question of human taste and stuff. But on the cover is a space elevator, and I do think we'll have one. Now, it was the Russian Konstantin Tsiolkovsky who talked about making an elevator to space, but people laughed at him because this cable would snap. Think of a ball on a string.
Uh-huh.
The ball on a string twirling does not fall because of centrifugal force. Therefore, if you take a big ball, put it into outer space, and let the Earth spin, then it should stay in up there without falling, like a skyhook. Well, now we've discovered something called nanothreads and graphene and nanotubes. Carbon that is super strong. You know, graphene is the hardest substance known, one layer of molecular carbon. You can take an elephant, put the elephant on a pencil, and balance the pencil on graphene, and graphene will not tear.
Jeez.
That's how strong it is. From that, we can build a cable going thousands of miles into space, and then you put an elevator on it. You push the up button, and you go into outer space. This is not so preposterous now. It's well within the laws of physics. NASA has even offered a challenge whereby they're asking inventors to create these elevators that'll take you into the sky. And for BBC television, I even interviewed some of these people who won a prize. They won the NASA challenge to create these little elevators that are energized by laser beams that may one day take you and your children into outer space.
That's amazing. And what would be on the outer space end, what would it be hooked up to?
Well, you think that it has to be hooked onto something, right? But it doesn't. Just like a ball on a string, why doesn't the ball fall? It's not hooked to anything, right? Well, it's centrifugal force because it's spinning so rapidly. And that's why if you think of the ball on a string, the hand is the Earth, and the ball that's spinning is the end of the space elevator, and that cable does not fall. It just hangs in midair, defying gravity. And so this is a skyhook, a hook that hooks to nothing and does not fall down. Arthur C. Clarke even wrote a science fiction novel about this, and we hope to create space elevators, well, not anytime soon, but we have to have long cables of carbon, pure carbon, the strongest substance known to science, stronger than diamonds, by the way, in order to build this space elevator.
How long would it take to get up there?
Well, you hit the up button, and you don't want to go too fast because then the blood rushes from your head.
Right.
So you go a fraction of a G, and it'll take, you know, maybe an hour or so to get up there. So when you look down on the Earth, you'll see the Earth just like in those pictures from the space shuttle, except you don't need to be launched on a space shuttle. You just hit the up button, and you go into outer space.
Have you ever been on an elevator where nobody talks to you? I'd hate to be stuck with somebody on one of these things.
You're stuck in outer space, 300 miles above the Earth, with somebody who doesn't talk.
Let's talk a little bit about health and technology in the year 2100. What will science do for doctors, for example, to make their jobs easier?
Well, doctors right now are a bottleneck in the sense that they're one individual. They have one patient at a time. In the future, doctors will be able to control robots, and these robots will be helpers. Japan is the world's largest maker of robots.
Yes.
30% of all commercial robots are in Japan. And the reason why, this is a dirty little secret, the reason why the Japanese are putting so much emphasis on robots is because they're aging faster than any other country, just like Europe. And people thought that as we live longer, we're going to overpopulate the Earth. Wrong. The opposite has happened. As we get wealthier, as we get more prosperous, we want to have fewer children.
That's
because
right.
If you're a peasant, you know that every child makes your land richer. You have more hands in the field. Therefore, they do a calculus. Every child makes you richer. Once they urbanize, go to the city, then every child makes you poorer.
That's true.
Right? And so that's one of the main reasons why prosperity and urbanization has dropped the birth rate dramatically around the country. And so anyway, so what I'm saying is that Japan has this problem, Europe has this problem of an aging population, so they need robots as robot nurses. These are the future of medical care, robot nurses that can carry patients, perform simple operations, give them medicines, wake them up in the morning to give them medicines. In the future, your doctor, your nurse may actually be a robot.
I saw a machine that looked like an inkjet printer that was spitting out stem cells to make skin.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
I can't believe this.
Yeah, this is the human
body
shop.
That's today.
Yeah, this is the human body shop. Today, from your own cells, not somebody else's, but your own cells, we can grow skin, bone, cartilage, noses, ears, heart valves, blood vessels. The first bladder was grown 3 years ago, and the first windpipe was grown last year from your own cells. In 5 years or so, we'll grow the first liver. This is going to be very heartening news for you alcoholics out there, that you're not going to die of liver failure and cirrhosis of the liver like Mickey Mantle did.
Because once that liver goes, that's it.
That's it, right? Unless you get a donor. And we're going to grow the liver. The liver's not that complicated. And in the future, we'll even start to grow brain cells, not to create the brain, but to inject baby brain cells into the brain to then learn how to connect themselves. You'll have to like learn how to ride a bicycle again. But this may be a way of treating Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease.
Would they be able to do some of this from within your body without having to cut you open? Case in point.
We're going to have robotic surgeons that can perform most surgery without hardly cutting the skin at all. They'll make tiny little micro insertions, insert wires, and then we'll have nanomachines carry out the surgery itself. For example, we now have a pill the size of an aspirin pill with a TV camera inside and a chip inside. You swallow it. You can guide it with a magnet as it goes down your stomach, and it takes pictures. It takes pictures and radios the image to a PC.
Incredible.
You can see pictures of your stomach, your intestines. You don't have to have a colonoscopy anymore. And this gives new meaning for the expression Intel inside.
Absolutely. That is amazing.
Yeah. And before we were talking about longevity, right?
Yeah.
You know that a chimpanzee has a lifespan half that of us. We live twice as long as a chimpanzee, and we have a much bigger brain. But genetically, we're 98.5% identical to the chimpanzee.
So how did they get so shortchanged?
It means that there are a handful of genes, and among them, there's a gene that doubled our lifespan.
That they don't have.
This is huge. We're talking about the fact that lifespan is partly genetically controlled. Different animals have different lifespans. Mice only live 3 years. Butterflies only live a few days. It's programmed into their genes. And so we're now locating them. This is huge. We're locating them. And if you ask yourself, where does aging take place in a car? In a car, where does aging take place? The engine.
The engine goes.
You have carbon deposits and soot and wear and tear. That's where the aging takes place. Well, in a cell, the engine of a cell is called the mitochondria. And sure enough, that's where aging takes place in a cell. We know where aging takes place. And if you could augment the repair mechanism, the self-repair mechanisms, you could, in some sense, live forever. Now, we can't do it yet, right? So don't believe the shysters who claim we can live forever instantly. But I think in the future, we could decide to stop aging at age 30 and simply cruise for decades and decades and decades at age 30. It's something that's well within the realm of what scientists are talking about today. This is really exciting. First time in human history we can even begin to think about immortality.
Gosh, I wonder what would happen to Social Security by then, Michio.
Well, you know, there's a Greek legend that Eos, the goddess of the dawn, fell in love with a mortal that, of course, ages and dies. And she said to Zeus, I want to give my lover, Tithonus, the gift of immortality. So Zeus said, okay, you're a god, you live forever, and your lover will also live forever. But she forgot to ask for eternal youth.
Ah, consequences.
So her lover simply got older, more decrepit, began to walk on canes and fell apart physically.
But he couldn't die. Still was alive, yeah.
So we want to have eternal youth as well as eternal life. Otherwise, you'll be like Tithonus with a rotting body that cannot die. Horrible.
That would be a nightmare.
But we're going to do that because we're going to have a human body shop in the future by which you'll order organs as they wear out, and we'll be able to cure many diseases like cancer. And it's all in the book. I even quote the doctors who are doing it, the medical results. This is not science fiction. This is all based on research done by the top doctors of today, saying that in the future, this is what they envision. This is what a visit to the doctor's office is going to look like in the future.
Mitchell, what about these people who died and their bodies are now in cryogenic chambers?
Well, you know, We scientists have looked at this because one day space travel may require us to be frozen, like in the movie 2001, where they froze the astronauts.
Yeah.
But let's be real about this. Ice crystals. Ice crystals form inside the cell and grow and rupture the cell wall. So some people say that maybe Walt Disney or Michael Jackson, who knows, celebrities will their bodies to be frozen. But after you thaw them out, you're going to have dead meat because the cell walls will be ruptured in a lot of these cells. Now, fish can be frozen alive. Frogs can be frozen alive. You know, there are videos of this. You thaw out a block of ice and there comes out a frog, right?
And he's alive.
He's alive. How do they do it? Well, we know how they do it. It's glucose. Glucose is an antifreeze that allows you to have warm blood even if the outside environment is frozen solid. Because it's an antifreeze. That's why your car doesn't freeze over during wintertime. But the human body cannot tolerate those levels of glucose.
I see.
It would kill us. But for fish, for frogs, I mean, they do quite well after the lake.
We'd be super diabetics or something, wouldn't we?
Yeah, we would have to change our genes so that we'd be able to withstand such a high dose of an antifreeze inside the body. Now, it's possible. So that means that when we have starships, we may want to freeze our bodies solid. But right now, all those celebrities that are willing their bodies to be frozen solid, I think it's going to be very disappointing when they are unthawed. Their descendants will find that there's nothing but, useless meat when you do that.
The late great baseball player Ted Williams, when he died, his family, at his request, cut off his head, and it's in a cryogenic chamber.
Yeah, I heard that. I think it may be possible to clone him. That is well within possibility because, for example, we can now think about cloning the Neanderthal man.
Right.
The genes of six Neanderthals were sequenced, put together in Germany, and we now have a complete genome, a roadmap of how to create a Neanderthal. I mean, who would have thought?
Let's assume, though, then they clone a little Ted Williams,
mm-hmm.
and he grows up and looks just like Ted Williams,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they've trained him to play baseball.
Right.
Can they take and download the memory from the brain of Ted Williams, which is in this cryogenic chamber? Can they download it into a computer and then upload it into this clone body? And then it's Ted Williams.
Well, you know, we have Einstein's brain. Einstein's brain was removed without permission of the family, stored in a jar for decades. And there's even a short film documenting the trials and movements of Einstein's brain over the decades. It's back at Princeton, by the way. It's made its way back to Princeton University.
It's in a jar somewhere.
It's in a jar, right? I've seen it. I mean, I've seen photographs of it.
Is it an unusually big brain?
Well, the brain is actually very normal looking, except the areas of the brain which govern abstract thought are very thick. They're thickened. And, of course, if you're an artist or a musician, you have to deal with abstract thought.
Huh.
And that's what Einstein did. And so we have the brain. But, you know, the nerve connections, they're all jumbled. You know, it's been in, like, formaldehyde. And to recreate all the nerve connections is way beyond our capability. Reverse engineering the brain. You know, we are trying to reverse engineer the brain of a fruit fly. In fact, I mentioned that in my book. You know, we're actually making progress, reverse engineering the brain of a fruit fly. But that's a fruit fly.
Yeah.
A mouse has 1% the neurons of the human brain. That's the next thing. Some people are beginning to reverse engineer the mouse. But they say it's going to take decades and decades of work to reverse engineer the mouse.
Well, you're talking about 100 years out, so who knows?
Yeah.
Huh?
Now, by mid-century or late this century, this is well within our capability. We'll slice and dice the brain, figure out all the connections, which neuron is connected to which, and literally create a computer model of the human brain. This is well within the laws of science. We're making the first inroads with fruit flies and mice, but by mid-century, hey, we may have a blueprint of a human brain.
Well, this is what's probably going to happen to poor Ted Williams. 100 years from now, they'll have the capability to not only clone him, but to download his memory into this brand new body, but mm-hmm. we probably won't have any baseball. And he's out of luck.
They sometimes say that if you can clone Hitler, all you will get is a second-rate artist because,
yeah.
you know, you have to recreate the political situation of the 1930s, right, where demagoguery prevailed. But without the political crisis of the 1930s.
Sure. And this hatred. You'd have to put that hatred in him.
That's right. You have to train him, teach him to have hatred. Right, exactly. So, like I said, it takes more than just genetics to create a human being with memories.
What about the soul, Mitchu, in a cloning? What about a soul?
Well, you really worry about these theological, ethical questions. The simple ethical question of bringing back a Neanderthal. One scientist said, what do you do with him? Do you put him in a zoo or do you put him at Harvard? I mean, it's a Neanderthal. It's a thinking, living being. Does a Neanderthal have a soul? How do you define the soul of a Neanderthal?
It has feelings. I'm sure it has emotion.
Right. And we think it may have some kind of primitive language. Yeah, but have feeling. It could be hurt. It would definitely protest if it was treated badly. And these are questions that will be answered fairly soon in the next coming decades. In fact, one professor at Harvard has already laid out how much it would cost, $30 million, to actually clone and bring back the Neanderthal man.
But they can do that?
Oh, yeah, it's all medically possible. We have the genome.
Oh, my
God. We can then take an ordinary human cell, modify the genes. Well, we can't do that yet, but a few decades from now, we'll simply modify the genes and insert them maybe into a female chimpanzee or maybe even a woman who volunteers. And 9 months later, out is created a being that hasn't lived on the earth for 40,000 years.
That's amazing. And would look exactly like a real Neanderthal.
Right. So these are just some of the genetic wonders that I mentioned in the book, all of which are backed up by Nobel Prize winners, directors of major laboratories. I'm not a science fiction writer, right? I'm a scientist. And I've interviewed my colleagues, and they tell me stories you wouldn't believe about what's going to be possible in the future. And that's my book, Physics of the Future.
Well, it's fantastic. Why would they want to make a Neanderthal? What's the purpose?
Well, you know, the mammoth, its genome is now being sequenced. We don't have the complete roadmap yet. But many people are saying it's very similar to an elephant. And one day in the future, we may have a zoo of extinct animals, saber-toothed tigers, mammoths. They were frozen during the last ice age. And they're all thawing out because of global warming.
Sure.
Siberia is thawing out. I give a lecture in Siberia once, in Krasnoyarsk, and they tell me they love global warming because all the ice is melting, and out of the ice are coming the bones of Ice Age monsters.
Right.
And with it, it's the DNA of the mammoth. We're sequencing the DNA of the mammoth now, and maybe we can insert that into a female elephant, and the female elephant will give birth to a woolly mammoth. We may have a zoo of extinct animals. Animals that died out during the last ice age.
Will we ever be able to make a Brontosaurus or Tyrannosaurus
That's
Rex?
Tough. However, soft tissue from the dinosaurs have been recovered. I mean, I never thought in my lifetime somebody would do this. If you crack open the thigh bone of a T-Rex, there is a gooey substance in the bone, and by golly, it's proteins of a living T-Rex that died over 65 million years ago. We've analyzed it. We've actually sequenced some of the molecules there. And it's the same proteins that we find in chicken and turtles. So chickens are close relatives to T-Rexes.
So we'll get a Tyrannosaurus Rex egg from a chicken. Stay with us. More to come with Michi Okaku right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll give you an opportunity to chat with Michi Okaku, author of Physics of the Future. We'll take your phone calls, but I've got some more things to talk with him about. Including, of course, we've got to get back into this Jurassic Park story. Zoos with extinct animals in them. Can you imagine? We'll talk about that when we come right back. Getting back for just a moment, these zoos with these extinct animals in them, I think that would be a huge, huge program. People would flock to those zoos. Dr. Kaku?
Yes, right here.
There you go. People would flock to those zoos, wouldn't they?
That's right. You know, we're talking about an attraction that is physically impossible today. But in the coming decades, we're going to be able to sequence the genome of all these Ice Age animals because they're thawing out of Siberia. And already we've gotten huge chunks of mammoth DNA, not the whole thing. We have the complete map of a Neanderthal already. The saber-toothed tiger, well, we don't have that much DNA from them yet. But we know that, for example, in the thigh bones of dinosaurs who died out 65 million years ago, we find soft tissue. I mean, who would have thought?
That's amazing.
I would never have thought that you could find soft tissue proteins.
Not 65 million years later.
Yeah, and you can analyze it, and there you find, you know, the proteins of chickens and turtles. But unfortunately, no DNA. We have yet to find any DNA from the T-Rex. Now, that would be huge if one day we can open the thigh bone of a T-Rex and find usable DNA. You know, that'd be huge. But we're not there yet.
If you find the DNA, then can you clone it?
It's possible. Already, quite a few people have talked about what it would take to bring back now a dinosaur. We would have fragments, hopefully fragments of the DNA. We would have to fill in the gaps with the DNA of turtles and crocodiles and things. And then you would sort of have like an average dinosaur. This has been seriously proposed by several scientists of bringing back an average dinosaur by completing the fragments of DNA with the DNA of existing reptiles of today. But it's not the T-Rex, so don't get your hopes up that we're going to have Jurassic Park.
Mitch, I spend a lot of time flying between Los Angeles and St. Louis, St. Louis and Los Angeles, and it's about 4 hours, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Will we ever get to the point where it's 20 minutes, just up and down, and there you are?
Well, let me say a few things about transportation. First of all, super magnets, we're going to have them in the future, so we'll float. We'll float on a chariot, just like the flying cars of science fiction. By the way, we already have flying cars. They're based on gigantic fan blades that can spin. However, they're really expensive, and the fuel mileage is horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
But they exist. In fact, for the Discovery Channel, we even did a show showing how flying cars work. But in the future, fuel mileage will be easy because we'll have super magnets, and that means there's no friction. Most of the gasoline that you buy just goes to overcoming friction of the tires in the road. Just like in a skating rink, it takes no effort to skate across an ice rink. And that's how we're going to skate across the landscape in the future, by coasting on a layer of magnetism. We'll have hoverboards. Every teenager wants to get a hoverboard, right? Just like in Back to the Future.
We won't have to worry about potholes in the roads, that's for sure, huh?
And then some people want to teleport themselves, like in Star Trek, beam themselves across the room. Well, that's real hard. But in the laboratory, we can actually beam atoms across the room. We actually photographed that for the Science
but
Channel.
Is it the same atom?
It's the information of the atom. So if you have Captain Kirk and you beam Captain Kirk across the room, the original is destroyed in the process. You see Captain Kirk die. His soul goes to heaven. But then this imposter forms on the other side of the room. And then the imposter has exactly the same memory, exactly the same personality quirks. He wants to sell Priceline to you.
Wearing the same clothes.
Yeah. And then you wonder, well, what happened to the soul? Is this the real Captain Kirk? You know, you really begin to ask the question, is the soul just information? Because that's what's being transferred. The information of one human being is being transferred into another. These are theological questions that physics is beginning to raise. I mean, who are we if we can create clones of ourselves? And in fact, even in artificial intelligence theory, in the wilder science fiction moments that we talk about late at night, what happens if you can upload your personality into a computer, right? A computer that has all the same mannerisms, all the same personality quirks, all the harebrained schemes that we all have. And it looks very similar to you, that your friends cannot tell the difference between this robot and you. Then what happened to your soul? I mean, is that really you? When you die, do you live forever because this machine over there can copy and mimic all your personality traits? You really begin to ask the question, who are we if in artificial intelligence of the future we can create robots that have our personality?
Will we have robots that lie to us, deceive us?
Yeah, for the most part, robots of the near future are not going to look like us. They're going to be robot airplanes, robot snakes that patrol the sewer system, that make sure the infrastructure of our cities don't crumble, monitor things. They're not going to look like us. However, by mid-century, robots may have emotion. We now realize that emotions are actually quite important because emotions tell us what's important, what's not important. People who have brain damage and are quite intelligent but have no emotions, they are paralyzed because they cannot make rational decisions. They don't know what is expensive, what is pretty, what is dull, what is uninteresting. Because to them, everything is the same because they have no emotions. And so we now know that emotions are really important for human beings because they give you values. They tell you what's important and what's not important. So when I see Spock on Star Trek, and he acts like a robot, you know, he talks funny, he's very mechanical, I realize that's all a fake because he's made value judgments. He's decided to become a Federation officer. He's decided that it's good to explore the universe. These are value judgments. These are emotional judgments. Robots don't have them. You have to tell the robot that it's important to save humans. You have to tell the robot it's important to join Starfleet. So emotions are there in Spock, even though the writers of the program thought that Spock had no emotions.
Right.
So in the future, robots will be emotional.
Now back to the travel again.
Mm-hmm.
Will we get that 20-minute plane flight?
That's hard, because we're now faced with the laws of engineering. And rocket ships that could do that fact, right, that can take us whizzing across the country, are really expensive. Now, this is the Orient Express that Ronald Reagan talked about. The Orient Express is a space plane. It takes off like the Millennium Falcon. You know, the Millennium Falcon takes off like an airplane, then turns on its hyperdrive,
and it's
then
gone.
It lands like an airplane again. That's an advanced version of a space plane. And, well, we actually have a space plane, you know that? I think it's the X-37, the spy plane.
The spy plane, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like a mini space shuttle. Take the space shuttle, downsize it so it almost looks like a toy, make it into a robot, and send it into outer space, not for 1 week, but 3 months. That's a space plane. It's top, top secret. The military, of course, is putting billions of dollars into it. And they, in principle, can access outer space within hours. It's a robot. If there's an emergency, you have to ship supplies someplace real quick. You get the space plane, takes like an airplane, totally by remote control, orbits the Earth for as long as you want, and then lands like an airplane. That could be the future of space travel, space planes. But right now, we don't have them yet. So don't buy a ticket on a space plane anytime soon.
You've talked about these levels of civilization in your works.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about us entering level one.
Mm-hmm.
What are we right now?
We are a type zero civilization. We're not even on this scale.
Yeah, that's as low as it gets.
That's as low as it gets, right. We get our energy from dead plants, oil and coal. Dead plants, that's where we get our energy from. But we can dream about 100 years from now, 2100, when we become type one. In the year 2100, we will be a type one civilization. The internet is the beginning of a type one telephone system. The European Union is laying the groundwork for some kind of type one economy. English will be the language of a type one civilization. We'll have type one sports, soccer and the Olympics will be the beginning of a type one sports. We'll have type one youth culture, rock and roll, rap music. We'll have type one culture. And then some people ask, what about type one government? Well, this is not a new world order by any means. We're going to have nations. Nations will still exist.
Still have that autonomy.
Right? And because people have to vote for the sewer system, right? You can talk about a planetary economy, but someone has to fix the sewer.
That's right.
And these are local governments. We'll have wars. But we'll have less wars because no two democracies have ever warred in the history of the world. Think of every single war that you've read about or seen in the movies. The wars have always been between dictatorships and monarchies, monarchies between monarchies.
That's right.
Never between two democracies. And the internet is a democratizing force. Just look at the Middle East right now.
Right.
This means that the spread of democracy will be much accelerated into the future because people are not going to stand for dictatorships when they can see on the internet that the rest of the world is prosperous. They're going to kick out their dictators, right? And dictators are going to have to run for their money or run with their money.
With their money. They've got it hidden away already.
Right. And so I think that's a hopeful sign. We will still have wars, because, of course, wars is politics by other means. We will still have wars, but we're not going to have the great wars of the past, because democracies never fight against other democracies. Democracies have a middle class. They want to get rich. They want to see their kids go to college, not to war. Middle class people in general don't want to send their kids off to war unless it's really an emergency. Then they will, of course.
Right. Unless they're tricked by a leader.
That's right. But, like North Korea, the only reason why the North Korean government can still survive is because the people of North Korea thinks that the entire world is starving. They have no idea that the world is prosperous because there's no radio, or if you have a radio, it only has one channel, the channel of the party. So it's horrible living in North Korea.
So we're a zero, moving into a one in the next 100 years. How high up can you go?
Well, you can go to type three, that is galactic, like the Empire, but some people think it could be type four. Once a little boy came up to me when I was speaking in London and said, there must be type four. And I said to the kid, get real. Type four, they're planets, stars, and galaxies. There's no type four. What's beyond a galaxy? But then I thought about it, and I realized there is something beyond a galaxy. Dark energy. This is huge. We now know that 73% of the universe is made out of the energy of nothing. Dark energy.
The kid was right.
the kid was right, that there is this continuum. Now, if you watch Star Trek, you know about the Q. The Q would be a typical Type 4 civilization. They are extragalactic. They can go between galaxies. And their energy source could be dark energy, the energy of the vacuum, Einstein's dark energy.
That is amazing.
Yeah, so there could be a Type 4. They're almost godlike in their powers. If you've seen Star Trek, you know that the Q can do pretty much anything he wants.
What do you see in this advancement, you, as the most dramatic change from where we are today?
Well, we're witnessing the birth pangs of the beginning of a Type 1 civilization. You know, when I open the newspaper, every headline that I see represents the birth pangs of a birth of a Type 1 civilization. What the revolution is happening in the Middle East is the revolution of the Internet, the revolution of democratization. When I see efforts in medicine, I see the beginning of a Type 1 medicine. I see English penetrating all sorts of corners of the earth. I see economies beginning to leap from being primitive agricultural to being modern high-tech. So these are the birth pangs of a Type 1. However, I should also point out that there are forces that don't like this. There are forces that do not like being Type 1. Now, of course, they can't articulate it. They're not scientists, right? But people who believe in nuclear proliferation, in biotech warfare, terrorism, terrorists hate a Type 1 civilization because it's scientific, it's rational. It's multicultural. They would rather live 1,000 years into the past rather than 100 years into the future. So there are forces, dark forces, that would rather that we do not move to a Type 1 civilization.
You devote a chapter to what you call the future of wealth.
Mm-hmm.
The haves, the have-nots. What's going to happen in 2100?
Well, I say quite frankly that we're making a transition between commodity capital to intellectual capital. Commodity capital is like food. You know, today you had breakfast that the King of England could not have had because food was very expensive during the time of the kings of England. Now food is so cheap, you get delicacies from around the world for dirt prices. So commodity capital, except for oil, constantly goes down on average. But intellectual capital, rock and roll, music, artwork, ideas, science, technology, creativity, that goes up in price. Tony Blair used to boast that England derives more revenue from rock music than it does the coal mining industry. Now, if you think of a British worker, you think of a coal miner, right? Well, hey, England derives more revenue from intellectual capital, rock and roll, than it does from commodity capital, which is coal. That's happening in China, too. China knows that you have to make the transition from commodities to intellectual capital. That's why they're sending all their young people to the United States to learn physics. That's where I see them. My students are Chinese from China. Because the Chinese understand that, yes, you have to make the transition from commodities to intellectual capital. But some countries don't understand this. They want to stay agricultural. And those countries will be poor, dirt poor in the future, because commodities get cheaper every year. Mass production, better containerization, more competition drives down the cost of commodities. But intellectual capital requires a brain. You cannot mass produce the brain. That's the bottom line. That's the reason why intellectual capital will dominate the economies of the world, because you cannot mass produce the brain. This means that in the future, we have to train our kids to be creative, to engage in human values, things that robots cannot do. Robots don't understand human values. Robots don't understand artwork. They're not creative. They don't understand science, music. But that's the future.
Will we ever go to Mars?
Yes, but by mid-century at the earliest. President Obama has stated that maybe in the 2030s, we may see the first human to land on Mars. I'd put it even further back, because look at where we are today. We're cutting back on the space program.
Yeah.
NASA is an agency to nowhere. NASA's not going anywhere, basically. So I think we have to push back the agenda for Mars. By mid-century, though, it becomes a possibility. First, we'll land on the moons of Mars. It's quite easy to land on a moon of Mars and take off because of low gravity. So we'll first land on a moon of Mars, but eventually we'll probably land on Mars itself. But having a civilization on Mars, that's centuries away. You're talking about a very advanced Type 1 civilization that has a whole outpost on Mars. Mars is quite cold. It's an outpost that is a frozen planet, frozen ice cube Mars, frozen desert. So don't expect to go on Mars anytime soon.
Do you think it once looked like Earth?
Yeah, once upon a time, Mars was tropical when Earth was molten. Mars cooled off first, being farther out, and maybe, just maybe, DNA got off the ground first on Mars, and then meteorites seeded Mars meteors onto the Earth. So some scientists have proposed the fact that we are the Martians. So the next time you want to look at an alien from outer space, look in a mirror. You may be the alien from outer space. Now, that's just a theory, of course, but you can't rule it out, that maybe life came from outer space.
When you were putting together Physics of the Future, was there one aspect of the future that really excited you?
Well, you know, I'm like a kid in a candy store. I just love to read about science ever since I was a kid, right? And I realized, wow, all the stuff I see in Flash Gordon, all the stuff in Buck Rogers, we're going to have a lot of it. We have already a lot of it today. When you watch Star Trek and you see their cell phones, you kind of laugh because we have like 80, 90% of what's in Star Trek. The only thing we don't have is warp drive, but that's what I do for a living. I work in string theory. We work in warp drive and space warps all the time. That's my day job. That's what I do for a living. But 80% of the day-to-day appliances of Star Trek, we already have. Like I said, we're going to have the holodeck very soon when we have internet contact lenses. We'll be able to create entire scenes out of nothing in your contact lens. So that's the future of the internet. So when I talk to these scientists, they get so worked up. They are so enthusiastic because they hope their fondest dream is that their invention will change human society. And that's what keeps me going, realizing that the passion of these scientists is infectious. You interview these scientists and you say, yes, yes, we're going to have flying cars, finally. Yes, yes, we'll have internet contact lenses. Yes, yes, we'll have programmable matter. Yes, we'll be able to create new life forms. It's really infectious talking to these scientists.
I would be 150 in 2100. I'm not sure I'm going to make that.
Well, you know, some people say that we could be the last generation to die, that our kids may not die the natural way. They may stop at 30 and simply cruise. And by the time our grandkids are running around, they may live in a totally new world where, of course, people live extended lives. So, yeah, it is true. However, for our generation, we're not there yet. You know, kings and queens have always wanted the fountain of youth. Even today, people want the fountain of youth. But we're not there yet. So don't believe it if anyone says that, bingo, you can live forever by buying their elixir. We're not there yet. However, we're getting close. We're getting real close. You know that we can double the lifespan of most animals now? You can take spiders. You can take worms. You can take yeast cells, rabbits, dogs, now monkeys. The monkeys were done just last year. Yeah. Proven that we can almost double their lifespan.
They are finding out how to slow down the aging process, no doubt. Stay with us. Phone calls next with Dr. Michio Kaku on Coast to Coast AM.